Mr. Walsh.
Thank you very much. Good morning. May it please the Court. Opposing counsel, who is now seated. I'm Attorney Adam Walsh, and I was appointed, and I do represent Mr. Medina Mendoza. Your Honors, this issue is very small and straightforward in this particular case. Mr. Medina Mendoza requests that this Court remand for sentencing the matter, which was heard before Judge Crabb in the Western District of Wisconsin on the 11th of December of 2012. The specific issue that we have with the sentence was an increase of 2 points in the sentence that Mr. Medina Mendoza received.
Walsh, what is your position on the Rule 28 letter filed by the United States?
I certainly understand the United States' position as to the Rule 28 letter in this particular case.
I didn't ask whether you understood it. I wanted to know what your position is. Do you want that conviction vacated?
I do not want the conviction vacated. No, I do not.
And why?
Because we are asking the Court to remand it only for sentencing purposes.
That's not a because. Why?
Yeah. Because under the particular circumstances of this case, the facts appear to be fairly straightforward in either event. I understand that there was ultimately a jury trial. But under my
position, I'm lost.
Okay.
Now, you may think it's in your client's interest to have two convictions rather than one, mm-hmm. and I suppose it's no business of ours to be interfering in the attorney-client relationship. But it's puzzling to me why a defendant would prefer an extra conviction. Now, maybe you think it doesn't matter that everything is concurrent. Have you paid the $100 special assessment? Has your client paid the $100 special assessment?
He has not paid the $100 special assessment.
So not even the special assessment seems to turn on this.
The situation is that I believe, based off my review of the case, that he ends up in the same position either way.
Yeah, but just because the bottom line may remain the same, he has a conviction that essentially is illegal because he's now there was judgment entered on both of the 922G counts.
That's correct.
So just because we vacate that one doesn't mean you leave your argument at the door. I mean, I'm with Judge Easterbrook. I don't quite understand.
I'm more concerned with the overall sentence that he received.
I sort of get that, but I mean, so you're saying you reject the government's concession that he shouldn't have been convicted on the 922G?
I'm never going to reject a concession, okay?
You just did. You told me you did not want that conviction vacated.
If the government is going to concede it, then I'm willing to accept that concession, of course. But I think that the focus of the case should be on the overall sentence which the defendant received in the particular case, because I don't think that one sentence or the other is going to reduce the overall number of points, which is my primary concern in the case. He received a 2-point increase. And the question of materiality as to his allegedly false statements that he provided revolves around the possession of the firearm, which is not a unique element to either one of the two cases.
But you agree the evidence revealed that he had different versions about how he came into possession of the gun, and of course it's for the district court to make the credibility determination about what to believe, and the district court rejected, didn't credit his testimony.
That's absolutely correct. He did offer throughout the case a variety of different versions of events as to how he came about the particular firearms, and it is, of course, up to the district court to make the decision.
Well, he confessed to having lied, right?
Yes, he did.
Well, why wouldn't that be obstruction of justice?
The district court found that he obstructed justice by providing the false testimony about whether or not he possessed the firearm. I confess that, of course, admitting to misleading the authorities could perhaps also provide the grounds.
Could perhaps? I don't see how there could be a clear obstruction of justice claim. I mean, he admitted lying to the authorities about the gun. The gun was the subject of the investigation.
It is sort of a catch-22, I do agree. He cannot both maintain that he possessed the gun and dispute the allegations and the stories that he had given previously. But then I think there's a question as to also whether or not any of those statements are in fact material to the question of whether or not he possessed the gun for the following reason. The defendant, despite some discussions about this beforehand, even in his own testimony at trial, in essence confessed to possessing the firearm. In his version of events at trial, he possessed, picked up the firearm, and moved the firearm from one location to another. Therefore, the jury could have concluded, based off that testimony alone, that he did in fact possess the firearm. This particular defendant had great confusion over ownership versus possession. And for that reason, the question then, in my mind, is whether any of the other testimony or statements about the possession of the gun is in fact material to an issue that's the subject of the case, given that he's already agreed to an extent with the government that he possessed the firearm. That doesn't handle your question about whether or not he obstructed justice when he met with the law enforcement agents, but it does get back to the primary issue that I was focusing on, which was simply whether or not he misled the court, the tribunal, or anyone else as to whether or not he possessed the firearm. And I think that that's what the court ultimately has to decide in this particular case. And if there are no other questions, I'll simply leave you at this time, reserving any additional time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Walsh.
May it please the court, my name is Julie Pfluger, and I represent the United States government. As the court has noted, there's two separate issues in front of the court today pertaining to this case. The first is the district court's finding that the defendant committed perjury at trial when he gave false testimony, thereby leading the court to give a 2-point obstruction of justice penalty at sentencing under United States Sentencing Guidelines Section 3C1.1. The second issue, as the court noted, is what the government submitted in our 28J letter, in that this court must be...
Why are you asking us to do that? Why don't you take care of it yourself? Dismiss the charge under Rule 48A.
Your Honor, when we looked at previous cases where this had occurred, where there was an illegal sentencing under 922G, the remedy that we found was that the Court of Appeals had remanded the case for merger of the two.
If the defendant asks for that relief, then and the government opposes it, the only thing that can happen is the Court of Appeals can order it. But in this case, it's the United States which now believes that it should never have filed the twin charges in the first place. Why isn't the right thing to do for the United States to dismiss the surplus charge under Rule 48A?
Your Honor, I wouldn't say that the United States shouldn't have filed the two charges to begin with. You're allowed to go to trial on both charges. However, it's the sentencing of both charges that causes the problem. And this case is analogous exactly to U.S. v. Parker. And in U.S. v. Parker, that is where a defendant can be charged with both of these, and the trial can proceed on both of these counts. There's no problem with that. It's just the sentencing that is multiplicitous. So in Parker, this court remanded for the merging of the two convictions and the vacation of one of the sentences. And as Your Honors noted earlier, this most likely... we're asking you to uphold the sentencing of the conviction. So this won't change the sentence besides for dismissing and merging one of the charges.
So was Parker a situation where the government conceded error?
Yes, Your Honor. So that's one of the issues in front of us.
Yeah, well, now it sounds more complicated. Something like merging the convictions requires... one should think the defendant's consent. And certainly Mr. Walsh did not seem to give his consent.
In U.S. bar...
Right, the government has not filed a cross appeal in this case. We can't give any relief at the government's request. We can only give the relief the defendant wants. And it doesn't sound like the defendant wants the relief you're proposing.
Well, I would say, Your Honor, that near the end of Mr. Walsh's presentation, he stated that if the government was requesting the vacation of one of the charges, that he would consent to that.
It now sounds like you're not asking for a vacator. You're asking for the convictions to remain as they are and to be merged.
In
maybe I should ask Mr. Walsh when he gets back on rebuttal. But it's a little complicated where the defendant isn't embracing the proposal and the government didn't file a cross appeal.
Your Honor, what the court said in U.S. v. Parker is that the government can pursue multiple theories of 922G at trial, but only one conviction because the convictions are multiplicitous, and that the case must be remanded to the district court so that one conviction can be vacated and merged, and the district court can enter an amended judgment. That was the words of this court in remanding Parker. If there's no further questions on that issue right now, the other issue that's in front of the court is the finding of perjury, and the government puts forth that there is no clearer case of perjury, thus leading to a two-point enhancement for obstruction of justice than the case that is before you. As the court noted, the defendant told several different stories about where he got the gun, and then when he went to trial, he claimed that it wasn't his gun at all. He gave a somewhat imposterous story about how the gun was accidentally left in his bed. And while the defense argues that the jury could have possibly believed his story, because he did admit the gun was accidentally left in his bed and he picked it up and put it in between his mattresses, therefore that could have constituted possession. That is true. The jury could have believed that story. However, the defendant's argument that therefore that somehow binds the district court in sentencing in finding that he had perjured himself does not follow. The district court did not commit error, much less clear error, in finding that the defendant committed perjury by looking at his two different stories to law enforcement, then looking at his testimony at trial. Then at sentencing, the government played a voicemail from the defendant's friend, Mr. Robinson, who Mr. Robinson left a message for the government the day of trial saying, "Hi, this is Mr. Robinson. Mr. Medina Mendoza is trying to pay me to take a case for him. It's not my gun." So we presented this voicemail to the court and to the defendant, told the defendant that we were going to play this at sentencing. The defendant challenges this voicemail saying it's not reliable because Mr. Robinson didn't appear at court for cross-examination at sentencing. This isn't required. The defendant was aware that this voicemail would be played. He doesn't challenge that the voicemail is the same Mr. Robinson. He merely says, well, Mr. Robinson must have changed his story. This isn't enough to show any error at all in the district court's judgment, much less clear. Therefore, we ask the court to uphold the sentencing, however, to remand for the issue that we spoke of in the 28J. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ms. Pfluger. Mr. Walsh.
Thank you. I'll simply address the primary issue that was taken up, or the first issue, with regard to vacating, or now it sounds to be merging, the cases into one another. I don't believe that it is going to make a material difference to this particular defendant. Let me be clear on that, whether or not that does take place. That being said, I would certainly agree with the United States that we should take care of that issue and would request that we remand the case back to at least vacate one of the two convictions and then perhaps merge from there. Although, ultimately, if the court does not modify what the points are in this particular case, I don't believe that it is going to make any difference whatsoever. And if there are no other questions, then I'll simply leave off.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. We appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment. I think, counsel, that it might be helpful to the court if you would file within 7 days a letter formally stating the defendant's position with respect to the prosecutor's suggestion that the two counts be merged. You have said at least three different things during argument. We would like to have your final word on it. Thank you very much. Now, the case will be taken under advisement when that advice is received.